All right, welcome back. You know, one of the best things that I enjoy about hosting Coast to Coast is picking out the bumper music. I get free ride here. And I come in with my song list and, you know, I hand it to Dan. He's like, "Are you crazy? This is nuts." And I'm like, "That's right. I love picking out the bumper music." So enjoy it tonight. And also check out Beyond Belief, where you can join Coast to Coast AM's George Norrie for dynamic discussions on the paranormal phenomena, conspiracies, all things unexplained. See the world through new eyes. You get new episodes weekly. You get unlimited access to Beyond Belief, and you can watch it anywhere on your computer, iPhone, iPad, whatever. No commercials, no sponsors. Enjoy Beyond Belief ad-free. Just go to beyondbelief.com. My guest tonight, parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach. He has been focusing on education and field investigation for over 35 years. And tonight, it's Friday, it's open lines, and it's time to get our edumacation on. Taking your phone calls next with Lloyd Auerbach. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I'm sitting in for George tonight. He's down in New Orleans at the Lee Harvey Oswald Conference. I just want to say hello to everybody in New Orleans. Go hang out and go see George. Now, our guest tonight's Lloyd Auerbach, and it's Friday night, and we have got the phone lines are completely jammed, and I'm going to get to those in a second. But Lloyd, I just got this strange question in Twitter, which was, "I think my dead father is calling my mother," and three phone calls came through. When somebody says something like that, what do you think?
Well, we have, believe it or not, a number of reports of phone calls from the dead going back many decades. I mentioned Scott Rogo before. He co-wrote a book with Raymond Bayless called Phone Calls of the Dead.
Right.
It was a study of that. And actually, a couple of years ago, my buddy Cal Cooper over in the UK published a new study called Telephone Calls from the Dead. It's an excellent book. And people do get calls that seemingly come from the deceased, including I had someone who actually sent me a recording that was done. It was a voicemail from apparently his deceased brother's phone. He had the phone in his possession, and it was deactivated, and it still somehow left a message for him.
Oh, that's not right. Oh, that.
Well, you know,
Ooh.
it seems that it was fairly quickly after the guy died. It seems that people do want to let us living folks know that they're okay. You know, it's said by a lot of people that the dead often don't hang around because they have an agenda. It's because we have an agenda.
What's your favorite movie that represents the other side? For me, it's always been What Dreams May Come.
I like that movie. Actually, the book is wonderful. The book's written by Richard Matheson.
Yes.
He's one of my favorite authors, and yeah, I really do like that movie. I do like Defending Your Life, just because it's fun.
You know what? I think I just remembered. Yeah, it's Defending Your Life that I enjoy the most.
Yeah, there are a lot of good ghost movies that are out. I think if you look back at their history of cinema, you find that most ghost movies with actual people who have died, we're dealing with comedies and dramas almost exclusively. There's very few horror stories. And the ghosts behave like they did when they were alive, and they behave like people report ghosts do. The movie Ghost was actually a great example of that.
Now, before we get to the phones, I want to share one experience that I had with you, and I'm going to do the extreme abridged version of this story. I was at a back house in Hollywood about 2 o'clock in the morning, waiting for the people at the house to get home. Right. And I'm waiting for the cars to pull in the driveway. And I look over and I see the curtains, big picture window, pull to the side. And I see a face look out at me. I went up and knocked on the door. Nobody answered the door. I thought the roommate was there or something and not letting me in the house, which made me upset. I knock on the door, knock on the door. Nobody answers. I go back to the car and I'm staring at the window. And then the people come home. And I said, "You know, I think your roommate's in there." "What? No, she's over at Chris's house or whatever. And they'll be here in a few minutes." I said, "Well, somebody just looked out the window." Now we panic. And then the roommate pulls up and her boyfriend. We all go in the house. me and her boyfriend are there to kick some butt, right? Thinking mm-hmm. that somebody's inside the house. House is empty. We, you know, go through the house. Nobody went in the back door. Back door is dead bolted. All the windows are locked. What did I see?
That's a really good question. Experiences like that, we really can't. We can't say exactly what you saw. You may have seen someone who decided, who was happening by. Obviously, from what you're telling me, I'm kind of guessing that the couple didn't have any experience in the room. It didn't have any experience with ghosts at all in the house.
None.
Otherwise.
Right.
So, you know, there are one-time experiences that people have, and it, from working with mediums and psychics over the years, it seems that there are some people who just kind of like wander through, and sometimes they kind of play a little bit, or they just try to mimic what they did when they were alive.
I tell you, I stood inside the house and looked back at my car and was pulling the curtains back, you know, and looking at, and I'm telling you, I was freaked out because moving the curtain, I know what I saw, and yeah. I know what it physically would take to move these curtains and put a face in the window looking back, and I freaked myself out pretty good that night, but it never happened again. It was interesting. Let's go to the phones. We are completely jammed up. Let's go to east of the Rockies. Let's go to Jan out in Virginia. Jan, you're first up tonight on Coast. Say hi to Lloyd.
Hello, Lloyd.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. Well, I have a two-fold question. First of all, how does one become a ghost?
Ah.
How does it happen that a person becomes a ghost
mm-hmm.
after death? And then number two, is it possible to pray someone through the portal so that they can go to heaven if they're a ghost?
Oh, both great questions. Okay. Thank you so much for that, Jan.
Yeah, well, the why some people become, you know, it's always a good, it's a really good question to ask because obviously some people stick around and most people don't. So we think that there's a couple of things going on here. One is the psychology or the intention of that consciousness, of that person who has died. You know, of course, a lot of people probably would want to stick around. So part two is something environmental. This is the whole, one of the reasons we're using equipment, where we look at the Earth's magnetic field. And in the last 30 years, there's been quite a bit of work in and around parapsychology, looking at the Earth's magnetic field and its connection to psychic experiences and abilities. And it seems to play a role in this whole process, whether it is, you know, at the time of death, shortly after the death, we're not really sure, because we don't have enough money to study that particular element of things, but there is an inkling that that's a big piece of it. Now, there's a third piece here, too, that may indicate why some people stick around, why others don't, and that is a purely spiritual issue, and that comes at it from the more religious end of things. We really can't address that, but I can't discount that there might not be some plan for certain people or some reason why they have to stay from that perspective. I will leave that out because we can't study that, but we do look at the other issues for people. As far as moving them on, you know, moving them to the light, moving to portals and so on, you know, it's not, the portal is kind of a weird word because a door is a portal when it comes right down to it. And I know people mean, you know, the connection to the other world, the other side. It's really more about those folks letting go. When we've had our cases, I feel very strongly that as long as the ghost isn't bothering people, that we're not going to push them to the other side.
Right.
We're not going to make them move on. We're going to let them know how to move on, because it seems that a lot of them, based on communications with psychics, mediums, and also witnesses, they don't know. They didn't see the light. They didn't see a portal. They didn't see a door. So we try to give them the information to let themselves go, and it's really their psychology is keeping them here, keeping them connected.
Very interesting. Let's go. I just went East Coast. I'm going to go West Coast, and I'm going to go to Paul up in Washington. Paul, you're next up on Coast.
Yes, I just had a question about ghosts that are not residual, that are actually intelligent. Are those human or are those demonic?
Human or sometimes pets. But we, you know, if you're defining demonic as in biblical demons, we don't find any evidence of that, nor do we really kind of head in that direction, nor do we look at the angel side of things for that matter either, because that really would depend on the culture you're coming from and the religion you're coming from, how it plays in context. But I will say that there are some people who stick around who are bullies, It's pretty rare to find somebody who's evil or malevolent alive, let alone dead. And it doesn't seem like murderers or anybody else sticks around either. So,
thank you for the phone call, Paul. Great question. And you must get that a lot. And yeah. When it comes to an evil, you know, an evil presence where somebody can feel the anger and like this spirit wants to hurt them.
Wait a minute, is anger evil?
Well, I mean, that's what would freak somebody out the most is something
that doesn't make it evil.
That isn't happy.
Yeah, again, that doesn't make it evil. I think we have to be really careful about the way we label things. When I get people playing me that Get Out audio that they were in a house and they did an investigation, the ghost hunter did an investigation, the first EVP they got was, Get Out!
Right.
You know, I have to ask them a few questions. And what it turns out is that they went in and they took over the house, they sent the people away, they set up their equipment. Basically, they were challenging the ghost. And frankly, if I was a ghost in that house, I would either be yelling, I'd be using some stronger words than just get out. And apparently, I've talked to a couple of ghost hunters who actually have gotten the F word a couple times.
Right.
Which is appropriate. I mean, if you are ghost hunters and going into a house and you're being rude to a resident at the home, they have every right to yell at you. That does not make them evil. In fact, that makes you the evil people because you're being rude.
So what makes it evil?
It would be action. What makes a human being evil? It's their actions that makes them evil. And perhaps some of their attitudes. I mean, we're seeing a lot in that in politics today, certainly.
Right, right. Okay, let's keep. Yeah, we'll keep the politics out of the poltergeist.
I just wanted to point that out.
but that would be a whole show in itself, Lloyd, and I would enjoy that. So let's stay on the West Coast. Let's go to Jeff here in California. Jeff, welcome to Coast.
Yeah, hi, Jimmy and Mr. Arbaugh. Yeah, I'm so glad that you were on, Mr. Arbaugh, because this subject of ESP, psi, and quantum entanglements, mm-hmm. the mind of people, you know, connected to one another is truly fascinating, and to most people, unbelievable. Unless a person is gifted or somehow chosen to do or perform one or more of these activities, you know, that is precognition, telekinesis, telepathic communication, clairvoyancy, remote viewing, you know, then the average person cannot relate to or understand this type of work. And it cannot be duplicated or replicated in a laboratory setting, you know, because all of these activities can only be conducted in a parallel dimension, which cannot be seen or accessed by the average person. But the information derived from these gifts or activities can be relayed to, you know, our current reality, you know, what we operate and live in now, you know, like the warnings of something, communiques with the dead or someone who hasn't been seen in decades. Or, you know, someone trying to locate something or someone or someplace, you know, via clairvoyancy or remote viewing and so on. But my question is this, Mr. Arbaugh, do you believe that a person with multiple gifts related to the ESP, psi, and quantum entanglements mentally could voluntarily or capriciously transfer these extraordinary gifts to other people of similar like mind? And do you believe that a gift like this is only meant for the person it was meant to have, you know, and cannot be transferred or altered or tampered with by outside forces like government agencies or clandestine agencies? And I'll take care of yourself there.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. First, I got to say that we do have replications in the laboratory. People can do ESP, some psychokinesis, certainly psychokinesis on machinery, on random systems. And we have some studies more recently under incredibly controlled conditions with mediums in the laboratory as well.
And certainly with quantum entanglement.
Well, quantum entanglement itself is a physics issue.
That's right.
How it scales up to human beings has not yet been determined, but certainly it's an excellent metaphor for how ESP works.
Exactly.
And, you know, of course, the government did sponsor research into remote viewing. That's what our book ESP Wars is about. The main author of ESP Wars is Edwin May, who was the program director of the Stargate program from 1985 to 95 when it closed. And Joe McMonagle is one of our authors as well. He was the number one viewer for the Army.
Right.
You know, people have aptitudes for different psychic talents. I would never, you know, I would call them a gift in the way that I would say that certain musicians are gifted or certain artists are gifted because maybe they have more access to their talents than other people. But we have, in our field of parapsychology, determined that everybody has some degree of psychic ability in some way, shape, or form. And people do report solitary experiences. You know, they may have one or two experiences in their life, or a precognitive dream or something else, and that may be it. Partly because our culture suppresses these abilities. It educates us, it convinces us that these things are not normal, when in fact they really are normal. And he kind of hit on something that's really interesting about giving it to other people.
Yes, and our children. If somebody's a really gifted, you know, psychic or a remote viewer, could they pass it down to their children?
There's definitely a genetic component here. It's just like there seems to be a genetic component of creativity in general.
Right.
So there's that, and that's something that we'd love to study a little bit more of. And I know that there's the start of that is happening now, because we do have some people who are coming from that end of things, from the genetic area as well, who are getting involved in some research. But what's interesting is that, you know, kids are more psychic because they haven't been educated out of it. They haven't, you might say that they haven't been brainwashed to not believe in it anymore.
Right, right.
And there are a lot of adults who have these experiences all the time, but they don't talk about them because our culture says you're weird if you have the experiences.
Yeah, I bet McMonagall's kids. Can you imagine? Let's go to Jay out in Missouri. Jay, welcome to Coast. Okay, Jay, turn us down. 2-1. Okay, sorry about that. Let's go to Tracy in Georgia. Savannah, Tracy, welcome to Coast.
Hi, how are you guys this morning?
Good, Tracy.
Good, thanks.
Okay, so my basic question is, do you think that children are more susceptible to seeing ghosts? I have a story that leads me to this question if you want to hear it, but otherwise that's just my basic question.
Yeah, I think kids are more likely to experience and to talk, to notice and to talk about these experiences. So they definitely are more open to it. It's just as they grow up, they're told by everybody from school to sometimes family, certainly religion, that it's not appropriate to do that.
Well, what about children? I know this is probably where Tracy is going, and I have two daughters. You know, their invisible friend, you know, their friend.
Might be a ghost.
Oh, no, Mars wasn't an invisible friend. We had one of our older daughters told us that she saw a ghost in our house, that she saw a man standing at the foot of her bed, mm-hmm. and that he pulled the blanket off of her bed. We didn't really believe her because there were some other issues going on with her, but then later on, another one of our daughters came and sat down at breakfast one morning, and this was literally like 12 years later. Sat down at breakfast and said, the man in the hallway said he died here.
Wow.
Just matter of fact, she was 4. So, you know, and I called my older daughter immediately. I was like, okay, what did you tell your little sister?
Right. Or you should have asked her what he looked like. That's what I would have
done. We did. And she said that he was wearing black and would not let her see his face.
There you go. And when you hear that, Lloyd, to me, I'm right there. I think these are actual events. What do you think when you hear something like that?
I think they're actual events also. I think that it's a shame that for whatever reason he wasn't able to communicate to adults to find out what he needed or to move on or what he needed at all.
This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. More with Lloyd Auerbach and your phone calls. Our guest tonight, parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach. It's Friday night, it's open lines, and we're getting educated. More with Lloyd right after this short break. Stay with us. Our guest tonight, Lloyd Auerbach, and it is Friday night. I've got a full rack of phones in front of me, so let's go ahead and do it. Let's go to Leroy in central Kansas. Leroy, say hi to Lloyd Auerbach.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Leroy.
Long-time listener. Okay, one quick thing. A few years back, I had a dream that my half-brother in California called and said, Leroy, Mom passed away. 1 week later, that was the exact worded phone call that I got. Mm. But now, the main thing, my wife and I were married 44 years. She passed away last of December of 2004. And about 2 months later, I started hearing knocks on doors, just 3 knocks each time. Or she always would call me Dad or Daddy. And I heard that called time and time again. Altogether, over the years, the two items have happened a total of 29 times. Last year, it slowed down a little bit, and it's just been a couple times this year so far. I was just wondering what your guest thinks.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, Leroy. Would you call that poltergeist?
No, I wouldn't. It sounds more like a communication. Poltergeist activity comes from living people and is very chaotic. It comes from the unconscious. That seems pretty deliberate. And in that circumstance, really, you know, this is the thing I tell everybody. When they have things happen and they think it's somebody, they should try to communicate. They should say somebody there and see if they can get response. In other words, open up the lines of communication, because that's how they get to move on. That's how you get to settle things. That's what we try to do. We actually try to help people with their ghosts. We set up the lines of communication. That's the first thing.
The other, on Saturday, it was my birthday, right? We had a little party over at the house. And my wife walks out on the patio. We had a group of friends there. Some of them you know, right? We had a group of friends. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, my wife says, I'm having a deja vu. At that exact moment, the same words came out of my mouth. We said at the exact same time, I'm having a deja vu. And Lloyd, that has never happened before. Okay, never, never happened. And then we go through this deja vu, and we're telling everybody on the back patio what is going on, and we kind of enjoy the moment and talk about it for 10 or 15 minutes. Last night, 10 or 15 minutes, last night on my show on Fade to Black, I went to tell this story to the audience, and I forgot what the deja vu was. So during the commercial break, I went out to my wife, down to her studio, right down the hall, mm-hmm. and I run in and I go, what was the deja vu? She goes, I was hoping you would remember. I don't remember. After the show last night, we were discussing as we were driving home in the car. I was like, what was the deja vu? I don't remember. This was on Saturday, Lloyd, and this was a 15-minute event that happened simultaneously, and neither of us can remember what the deja vu was about. What is going on there?
Well, the first part, people do have kind of simultaneous deja vu from time to time. They're almost like you're having a psychic moment of psychic clarity. And the sense of familiarity that comes with deja vu may very well have been the connection itself. Why you forgot, I've never heard that before, to be very honest. I'm not sure what to make of that.
We were both so upset with ourselves. We had two minutes to get upset during the commercial break, right?
Yeah.
And we couldn't. And I'm talking to you right now. I still don't remember. And I don't know. I don't know what to make of it.
You told your friends you ought to see if any of them remember, because...
You don't think we had that discussion last night going home in the car?
Sure you did.
we did. Let's go to John in Wallingford, Connecticut. John, you're up next on Coast.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question. I was wondering if you could point me in the right direction. I'm looking for, I'm trying to learn how to tap into my own psychic abilities. And I was wondering if you could recommend a good book, something to read so I can learn more about it.
John, thank you for that question, because I was going to ask Lloyd that very question. Lloyd, where is the best resource to go to?
Well, you know, best is hard to say. It really depends. My late colleague Annette Martin wrote a wonderful book called Discovering Your Psychic World, which unfortunately is out of print. I still have copies, and in fact, her husband gave me a bunch of copies to sell for them. So if folks want to contact me through my email, which is profparanormal@gmail.com, they can ask about that. There are a number of books out there. One of the things that we learned in our field is that there are, when you look at the psychic development books that are out there, it's good to look at a whole range of them and find the things that speak to you, because you'll find that there are similar techniques for many of the different psychic development books, but they have their own individual spins based on the author's personal experience, which may not be your experience. But if you look at the exercises and look at those things, you'll find that there generally are going to be things that strike a chord. And the other thing to know is that you're not going to be good at everything. Annette's workbook, for example, it's a workbook that kind of takes you through everything from trying to see auras to doing psychometry, holding an object and knowing what its history is, to trying to move objects. And Annette, when she put it together, said, well, I can't do everything in this book either. So you do different things to see what actually works for you. But the best, there is a book, I think it's the Complete Idiot's Guide to Intuition. I think that's the current title for it. It used to be called The Complete Idiot's Guide to Being Psychic. But that's a pretty good book that's out there. I'll give you some advice that was given to me by the late Alex Tanis, a phenomenal psychic who works at the American Society for Psychical Research. And he always said that the first step for becoming psychic is noticing you already are. Because we are having these psychic perceptions every day. We just have our normal senses getting in the way.
One of the things that we all want to see is the evidence of telekinesis or moving objects.
Yeah, that's the toughest one.
Have you ever captured anything on video? And B, have you ever seen footage of an actual telekinesis event occur?
Well, I worked with someone back in the 90s, a guy by the name of Martin Kaden, who, among other things, was a phenomenal science and science fiction writer and a consultant to NASA, who was able to move objects under some extremely well-controlled conditions. And we did video some of it, of what he did. And in fact, I put that in my Mind Over Matter book, as I mentioned earlier in the show. The book is coming out with exercises and how to try to do it yourself. That'll be coming out next summer again. So I've seen, and I've seen other people do it. I've also seen a lot of fraud, both in the context of entertainment and also otherwise that's out there. But the biggest problem with psychokinesis, when it comes right down to it, is human performance issues. It's performance psychology. I think that sports psychology actually has a lot to say for people who try to move objects, who try to do psychokinesis, because there's this doubt and disbelief that it's even possible, that it's so ingrained in us that getting past that is really, really, really difficult. And when I worked with Martin Kaden, we actually did a couple workshops, and it was interesting that no one could do anything until, well, I take that back. One person or two people could do something with instruction, but once the other people saw an individual do it, so if the others saw someone do it, they were able to do it most of the time. But then at least half of them got a little freaked out as soon as it happened, and they couldn't do it again.
Right. Well, that would make sense, actually.
Yeah, this is so psychology-bound.
Right.
And it's just totally, you know, it's really in line with that performance sports psychology area. Totally involved in line with that.
Now, how do you explain two or three, four or five people sitting in a living room together and maybe talking about the paranormal, and then an object that has been on a shelf for 10 years and has never moved and then falls and drops on the floor?
Okay, so it's one of two things. Number one, it's coincidence, which does happen. But number two, it could have been one of the folks unconsciously moving the object.
Well, my mom used to say a coincidence is God talking to you.
Yeah. You know, when things like that happen, I got to be honest, because of my magic training, my immediate, and because of something I learned from Uri Geller many, many years ago, I have an unconscious reflex reaction where I will say, I did that without even realizing I'm saying it anymore.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, I've got to remember that, and I'm not going to give you credit for it when it does happen.
You can give Uri credit for it. I actually was at a party with some of my magician buddies, and when something like that happened, and two of us, myself and one of the other people, said the same thing, said I did that at the same time, because he was doing the same thing.
I should almost apologize when it happens. I think that would be even funny.
Yeah,
sorry about that.
Sorry. I'm sorry I did that.
Yeah, I did mean to do that. Let's go east of the Rockies. Max, out in Texas. Max, you're up next on Coast.
Okay, can you hear me?
We got you, Max, quickly.
Okay, great. I'll make it quick. Hey, Jimmy, you're the best. I really love your music. And anyway, I have ESP. The way I got it was from my mom just teaching me to that it was okay and to reinforce it.
Great.
And the book that changed a lot of it was Stalking the Wild Pendulum. Have y'all heard of that?
Yes. Book. Yeah, that's a really interesting book.
And then I learned about Gopi Krishna and read a lot of his stuff and Kundalini. And then Awakening the Goddess is a chat group I'm with. And then also Take Back Our Skies. And I hope Andy and Karen can get some votes. And anyway, I ran off the Poltergeist one night at like 3 in the morning. He was a little short guy, and I just said, get out. But I do have telekinesis and stuff. I made the 8-ball on the break in Pool Tonight and combination of time and 3-rail shot and stuff like that. And I play Texas Hold'em and do pretty good. But, yeah, it's all about what you eat and just you got to believe in yourself. And I say I did that too. And, you know, when you have the funny feeling that you've already forgot something before, that's called Dejanesia.
Thank you so much for the phone call, Max.
That's great. I love you guys. Take care.
Thank you so much. That was
right. You have to believe in it.
That's an absolutely great phone call. Let's go to the East Coast. Let's go to Paul out in Georgia. Paul, welcome to Coast. First time caller line.
Thank you very much for having me. A fantastic show tonight, gentlemen. Here is my question. I'm listening to some of these stories about ghost encounters, including yours, Mr. Church. I notice everyone's wide awake when they're seeing these ghosts.
Right.
I'll tell you my story. I was sleeping, and then I woke up to my alarm clock, and I reached for it. And instead of glowing nice and green like it usually does, I saw bright yellow light and the figure of this woman. It was a ghost in my mind, as vivid as could be. The problem is, when I tell my friends the story, they say, oh, you were asleep. It was a dream. I'm trying to think to myself now, am I more likely to see a ghost when I'm awake or when I'm in this dream state?
Yes. Thank you for the phone call, Paul. Go ahead, Lloyd.
There is research that shows that the state between sleep and wakefulness, the hypnagogic state, is one in which people have a lot of interesting imagery, much of which is from the dream state. But there is very clear evidence that that's a state that is psychic conducive, that people have out-of-body experiences and actually have genuine experiences. Not everyone has psychic experiences, which include seeing ghosts, in the same state. Some people are much better, they're in their experience of having it when they're wide awake. Other people will have it when they're in that hypnagogic state. Some people have to be in a meditative state. So it seems that, at least for you, it may just be that that's the hypnagogic state is the best state to be psychic.
What about if you if you're with a partner or your wife mm-hmm. in bed, do they see the same thing?
It depends on whether they're open to it. You know, the thing about ghosts that's really important to know is that it's not a visual, just like that audio, that there's a psychic sound. So you could have 10 people in a room and 2 people or 3 people see the figure of the ghost. If the ghost is talking, one of those 3 people might hear the ghost also, but the other 2 don't.
Right.
And then there are 2 other people in the room who don't see the ghost, but they hear the ghost. And then there are other people in the room who feel a presence. And then there are people in the room who don't experience anything.
What about the aspect of, and I've talked to a lot of researchers, just like you have over the years, about a lot of these are not ghosts or spirits, but it is electrical and it's interdimensional. And it's somebody coming in and coming out, and it's just another being.
Well, you know, we have, for many ghost sightings, we can actually identify who the people are. And they're definitely deceased people, although there are cases of apparitions of living people, people who are having out-of-body experiences, for example. The interdimensional thing, you know, we can't even go there. There's not even the math that describes that for us. So we proceed along the lines of these are probably deceased people, possibly living people projecting out of their bodies. And we kind of examine this from that perspective. It could be that it's the other. Of course, a lot of the experiences people have when they see a figure is really that residual haunting. They're seeing a figure of kind of a recording of something that someone in the house who had been in the house. And we have many cases of people seeing ghosts or figures in these haunting situations where that ghost is actually representative of a living person because living people make recordings, dead people don't. It's the living that leave those recordings behind, not the dead. And you can have a recording of yourself. People have reported seeing a ghost in a darkened hallway, and they suddenly realize they're seeing themselves wearing the clothes that they were 2 weeks before.
And then you have the other side, which is the sleep paralysis issue. I've had my own experience where I woke up and something was at the foot of my bed, and I blinked with this guy for 15 minutes.
Yeah, that was probably, that's not the definition of sleep paralysis. That is possibly an actual experience that you had or something coming from the hypnagogic state. Sleep paralysis is a state that we're all in when we're dreaming. There's a dysfunction of that when you wake up and...
You can't move.
You can't move, or part of you, let's see, we've all had the experience of waking up in the middle of the night and our arm or our leg are totally dead.
Right.
Because your body didn't come, it didn't wake up all at the same time is the problem. It didn't come out of sleep paralysis at the same time. And the stereotypical sleep paralysis experience people report is something sitting on their chest, which is actually about the torso, the center part of your body, not coming out of the sleep paralysis state while you're coming out of the dream state at the same time as the rest of your body.
Lloyd, I want to thank you in advance here. We're about to hit to a break, but really quick, for everybody out there that needs to get a hold of you, what is the best way to do that?
Well, unfortunately, our server blew up, so our website's down. My website will be back up shortly. It's mindreader.com. In the meantime, they can connect with me via Twitter, which is Prof Paranormal, P-R-O-F, Paranormal. That's one of the best ways to connect with me. I'm on Facebook. The Lloyd Auerbach author page is the place to connect with me there. My email is profparanormal@gmail.com. And you can also contact me through one of my other websites, either speakasyourself.com or hauntedbychocolate.com.
Hauntedbychocolate. Lloyd Auerbach, you are the very best. Thank you so much, Lloyd, and have a great, safe Halloween.
Thank you. You too, Jimmy.
This is Coast to Coast. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I'll be right back taking your phone calls.